ethos, I mean, yes, I am still Indian that way, but I think I've imbibed a lot of the Swedish culture, how they speak with people, how it's a very consensus-driven society. It doesn't matter whether you're a CEO or just an engineer, right? Nobody overrules you just like that.
Guys, welcome back to Two Suitcases. This is a show where we unpack immigration stories and explore complex topics that transcend borders and culture. I am Raksha Rajagopalan.
And I am Bharat Madrasnatarajan. As third culture kids in America, Raksha and I see life from our lens, a multi-generational journey, each generation gambling on the ultimate dream of reaching the promised land. The promised land. A short list of havens conjured up in our dreams and hopes for future generations. America, England, Australia. In this episode, we explore a first-generation immigrant's journey to a place that, for many dreamers, is probably not on that short list. Once a traveling salesman, Hrishikesh Rajan followed his dream of starting his own company and has now found a home for his beautiful family in Sweden. We pick his brain as he reflects on his life in India, the various factors in his decision to move out, and him embracing the Swedish dream. Comparing our own experiences as Indo-Zambian immigrants in America, we found it intriguing how he balances his identity as an Indian and Swedish citizen, and how he is translating this new hyphenated identity to his children. Here is our conversation with Hrishikesh Rajan. We hope you enjoy it as much as we did. Thanks for sitting with us, Hrishikesh. We're looking forward to this conversation. For some context, Hrishikesh is Raksha's cousin who lives in Sweden. So let's dive straight into it. So you live in Sweden. Tell us a little bit about how you made that decision.
I never had any intention of moving out of India. I grew up in India and I'd moved quite a few cities within India. Very briefly, had lived even in the Middle East when my father was there. But the intention was always, you know, that I didn't really want to move out of India. I loved my life in India. I had these massive gangs, lots of friends, always surrounded with friends. So where all my friends used to come, and it used to be like an open door thing. So
yeah,
always people coming in and going out. Even when I wasn't there, my friends used to drop in and say hello to my parents, grab a quick bite and whatnot. They still do. And my mother is there. My parents are still there. But then I think on either side of my family, on my father's and my mother's, I think most of my cousins had moved out of India. There were maybe a handful who were still back in India. My sister had moved out. And even my school and college friends, right? Maybe about 75% of them had moved predominantly to the US. But somehow I just didn't have the inkling to really move out. And like I said, I had a great time in India. Everything was taken care of, you know. But then around, I would say, I started doing well, actually, in my career as a sales guy on the engineering side. And then it just, one day it hit me that, you know, if I have to really grow in my career, I need to move out and explore a little more. And that's how that thought set in. It was a Friday evening. I was having a beer with a couple of friends and I got a call from my boss saying, hey, would you like to move to Stockholm? It was just out of the blue. Because the first choice would have always been the US. And I had an option to either move to US or Singapore. And then I was like, hold on, Stockholm, let me go look it up on the map. Right. And then I said, I need a couple of days. I need to talk to my wife and so on.
So at that point, you were already married when this was happening?
Married.
Okay.
Really married. And my wife had a great job. Obviously, it wasn't a decision that I could make on my own.
Right.
And I spoke with her. Yeah, she said, okay, let's give it a shot. Let's see what it is. So we said, okay, let's do this. And we'll probably give it a couple of years and see how it goes.
Yeah.
We can always come back.
Yeah.
And yeah, 7 years later, here I am, a Swedish citizen.
Nice, nice. How did it feel kind of taking that leap? Did you know much about Sweden at all? Or did you kind of have to do a bunch of research when that opportunity opened up?
I actually didn't know much. I just knew it had a great happiness index.
Yeah.
And high taxes.
Yeah.
That's all I had heard. And when I said, I told someone, oh, they said, oh, beautiful snow-capped mountains. And, you know, I said, oh, no, that's Switzerland. We're talking about Sweden here. They're like, oh, Sweden. So, yeah, and then I had to sit and actually do a little more research on, you know, what it meant to move to a Scandinavian country. Of course, I had had some amount of exposure to the Nordic region because I was working with customers in India.
Okay.
Who had, I mean, basically Nordic companies who had set up shop in India, right? So I was mm-hmm. working
right.
with them. So I was familiar with the names, but I really didn't know what it meant to live in a country like Sweden.
Okay. You'd mentioned growing up, you'd lived in different places, including the Middle East. How was that experience? Or do you remember much of that moving around experience at all?
These are the things that where I had moved, right? So I was born in Bangalore. I had lived the first 6 months of my life, apparently, in Madurai, then back to Bangalore, then to Riyadh in Saudi Arabia,
mm-hmm.
back to Bangalore. And then I finished my engineering, and then I was in Mysore, then Mysore to Bangalore again, and then to Chennai for my MBA, then back to Mysore for my job. Mysore to Chennai again, Chennai to Bangalore, and then Bangalore to Stockholm.
Wow.
So you'd kind of already been used to moving around quite a bit by that point. By that point, you had to make a decision to move to Stockholm.
Yes, I was moving around, yes. But I actually had, I thought this is it. I wouldn't move anywhere else. Mm. Bangalore would be home. Since this opportunity came, I said, okay, let me give it a shot. And then by then, like I said, I had started thinking of if you look at most of the businesses in India, the IT and engineering software businesses, revenue was coming from outside of, you know, the Asian region. So it was either US or Europe. Then I said, okay, fine, let me give it a shot.
So what were the decisions that you had to make? Because you were moving for your job. And how did that factor into your wife, Sumitra's, you know, coming along with you? Did she have a job or, you know, did she have to start from scratch when she got to Sweden?
No, so she had to start from scratch. And that was going to be difficult because Sweden is, while everyone speaks English, it's not an English-speaking country. Obviously, they would prefer someone who spoke Swedish.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, it helped that she was an engineer because the chances of her landing a job were that much more higher. But still, it's not as easy as maybe the US or Australia or Singapore or Canada. And yeah, she gave me an ultimatum. She said, 6 months, if I don't get a job, we're coming back.
Okay. Okay.
So that was her ultimatum. 5th month after we landed here is when she got her job again.
Perfect timing.
That's how it usually happens, right? Right at the last minute.
Yeah. So I think that was the biggest decision. What happens to her career? Mm. She didn't want to be someone who just follows the husband around.
Right.
Because she was very sure about where she wanted to go as well. So that was, I think, the biggest decision for us.
Mm.
Apart from that, the other major decision was, you know, how do we leave our parents back there?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Especially on, my dad wasn't keeping very well.
Okay.
I wasn't really sure if, because my sister had already moved to the US and I didn't think she was going to come back anytime soon. So those were the two major things that I had to sort of think through.
Leaving family behind, you know, having to reset your career and obviously the language issues. Besides those things, were there any other, you know, cultural differences or cultural challenges you guys faced once you moved to Sweden?
Oh, absolutely. It's very, very different. And I had been to the US. I mean, I had traveled a lot. I have done about 30, 35 countries. But when you stay in a different location. I mean, even when I moved, say, from Bangalore to Chennai, I could feel the cultural difference.
Right.
Yeah.
And me being a Tamilian, I still felt so out of place in Chennai initially.
Wow. Mm.
It took me a long time to get used to Chennai, the way people are, the way they think, and so on. And imagine moving to, you know, a completely new country, new culture. Culturally, it is very different, very advanced, of course. Yeah, you do need to get used to their ways of working, their thought processes. So that took some time for us to... And then the big thing for me was, you know, not having this huge friends gang around me.
Right.
That used to be the... And that was a real, real shock for me. It's like... And it is very... And post a certain age, I think it becomes a little difficult for you to make friends easily.
Right.
So, because your ways of thinking are kind of set, making friends then becomes a lot more harder. So you need to sort of change a lot of your perspectives to start making friends.
That's tough. And plus, I think for the first time, it's probably just you and Sumitra in one location alone without knowing anybody. So you had to figure this out together, which would have been really difficult.
Right. Well, I knew a few colleagues of mine, maybe their wives and so on. But that's pretty much it, but no one else. And of course, I mean, if I compare it to a country like the US, you do, you invariably bump into a friend or you name the city in the US on, I mean, at least the major ones, right. I will have some connect or some relative there.
Right.
Not so in Sweden.
Did you have to prepare for your move? I don't know what you were thinking or what you're going to expect when you got to Sweden. Was it completely different from what you imagined it to be? You know, because I remember back in the day when my parents were moving from India to Africa, right? They had to take everything from all the groceries, and we obviously like eating Indian food and things like that. But I don't know how you prepared to move from India to Sweden. What did you do?
I don't think, I never did any of that because I just assumed that, you know, you would get... at least some of the spices and so on. I mean, when I moved, it was 2014. So you definitely had a sizable Indian population. I didn't really think, but what I did, of course, was I moved first.
Okay.
And Sumitra came in about 45 days later. I was here to find an apartment. Housing is a major problem here. It took me quite some time to find an apartment.
Major problem in what sense?
You don't get apartments. This is because the government kind of controls how much construction actually happens, because they had a major bust in a major housing crash in the mid 90s. Since then, they are very, very particular about how much is being constructed and so on. But they suddenly had an influx of a lot of people, immigrants, and then, you know, a lot of refugees as well, because of crisis in the Middle East and Afghanistan and so on. There was a real scramble for houses and apartments and things like that. So, yeah, it was a big challenge initially. And then, of course, by then I had figured out a few things, so I could always call Sumitra and say, hey, these are the things you need to bring. A pressure cooker, for example.
Good planning.
So now that you've lived in Sweden for what, 7 years, and you've gained your citizenship, what do you do now?
So I run my own company. I run a product, software product platform company. So we are headquartered in Sweden, and we have about 40-50 employees in India.
Nice.
So that's, again, a very interesting journey. And I think Sweden gave me that opportunity to start something on my own.
Mm-hmm.
And I thankfully, I didn't have visa issues, and it was fairly straightforward. Yeah, and I think as a society, Sweden encourages you to do something. So the psyche that we need to understand here is it's a very small country by population, 10 million people.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, by land mass, it is actually a very, very large country. People don't realize it, but it's a very large country. But for them to stay relevant in the global markets, so they need to, you know, continuously innovate. And from the very beginning, they've been churning out these massive companies that are, you know, really global. Ericsson, IKEA, Volvo, Scania and even the new age companies like Spotify, Truecaller, all of them are Swedish headquartered. Your Candy Crush.
I didn't know that.
Candy Crush.
Yeah, so all of them are Swedish headquartered. So it's a very, very, very innovative culture.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And that was a big, big difference for me when I came in. So
speaking about the culture and the opportunities that Sweden's kind of afforded you, you know, you'd mentioned that initially you thought about moving out of India meant, you know, most likely moving to the US. And with family in the US as well, how do you compare the two kind of paths to citizenship or paths to, you know, permanent status? Do you think about, you know, some of the struggles that your sister has to go through being Indian in the US, trying to get a certain set of legal paperwork versus your journey that you've kind of gone through?
In one word, I feel sorry for you guys.
We feel sorry
for
ourselves. Feel sorry for ourselves. Let's not even kid ourselves here.
But the US was this land of opportunity, right? So, and I was actually very skeptical. I was like, what can I do in Sweden? I mean, the US is the market to go to and so on.
Right.
Yeah, I just said, let me take a chance and see. Worst case, I can always move to the US.
Right.
You know, that was always open for me, right? So, but when I came here, so the things, why do you do certain things, right? So, I've been hearing some of your previous podcasts as well. Maybe for a better life, et cetera, right? I've heard what your mother said and so on. So, the things that taken care of for me in Sweden, my healthcare is taken care of. I don't pay anything for my healthcare. My kids' education is taken care of. I don't pay a penny for my kids' education. Old age is taken care of, so I get a pension. We do whatever we do to save up or to spend on these aspects, right? And those basic aspects are taken care of, which was a big revelation for me. And until I came here, I didn't realize that. I said, oh, the taxes are so high, blah, blah, blah. But then I realized, oh, okay, hold on. Whatever I make, the state does provide me with a lot of facilities for that, and good clean air, drinking water, public transport and whatnot. I think it is worth paying that money, right? So that's how I started looking at it,
right.
And then it wasn't more about I may be making, you know, maybe one fourth or one third whatever at my position makes in the US,
but right,
I think I have a fairly good life. I don't have to really struggle for a lot of things.
Sounds to me that all the basic needs as humans that we are looking for, right? Ultimately providing for our children, future children, or life that we want to set up. If that basic need is set up, then you can actually live your life, is what I'm hearing from what you're saying.
Exactly. And that was the big thing for me. And it didn't happen overnight. It took me about maybe a year, year and a half for me to start realizing that, hey, hold on, this is the difference between someone in the US who is probably chasing that six-figure, seven-figure salary. But overall, if you look at it, it's pretty much the same, right? You also end up paying on your insurances and whatnot.
Mm-hmm, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, and I think as immigrant communities, one of the things I'm noticing as I grow older is that, you know, we come from a mindset of making as much money as you can, so that you can save up for your kids to get a good education, or save up for your kids to have a better life. And then eventually to also save up so that, like, your healthcare needs and whatnot are figured out as you grow older too, and like you're set for retirement. But yeah, we're kind of set up, we think about life as make enough money so that you set your kids up and then you set yourself up for retirement. But then, you know, in the West, you see that there's certain opportunities in certain societies where you pay a bit of a higher tax and you take a bit of a so-called salary cut. But then if your kid's college is figured out and you're in a good country with a good educational system, at least at the tertiary level, then you don't have to worry about saving hundreds of thousands of dollars to send your kids outside the country to pay international tuition and figure all of that out. You've kind of already moved to a certain place where by you moving there, you set up a better life for them automatically. And you've also set up a better life for you in terms of being in a place that provides you better healthcare, being in a place that provides you better retirement benefits when you get older. You know, I think as immigrants, at least for us who moved out of India to other third world countries, You know, it's hard to get out of that mentality of let's make as much money as we can and save as much money as we can by ourselves without relying on these kind of public institutions. It's harder to, one, see those opportunities when you come out of those countries.
Yeah.
But even after you come out, you kind of have to change your mindset to realize that, hey, there are certain societies with a good enough social safety net.
I agree, because talking to you, Hrishikesh, it kind of opens up your mind, right? Everybody, we all grew up thinking, okay, the next big thing, you go to the US or you go to the UK. That's it. There was no other options apart from these two countries. And now, right, sitting as an immigrant, facing all these immigration issues, visa problems, you kind of sit back and think, what do I want out of my life, right? What are the basic things that I'm looking for? That mind opens up. Their world is bigger than the US. The world is bigger than the UK. And you kind of want to go and explore the next big thing, is what I call it.
No, I was just going to ask, like, along those lines, when we have conversations with our families about moving to another country or moving out of India and Zambia, it's almost always to US, UK, Australia. Did you have any kind of tough conversations with your family? You know, was there any kind of pushback in you picking Sweden to move to?
Or being skeptical on your choice?
Not really, because like I said, I was 30 when I moved here, right? So I'd already, and I was married and pretty much living on my own, even back in India. So the decisions were predominantly just mine and Sumitra's. My parents didn't really sort of, you know, they said, okay, what about the US? Would you consider going to the US? And I said, this is a good opportunity to look at another country. And like I said, the US is always open. I can always move to the US. When I want. It was more of an experiment.
Yeah.
An experiment that has, touch wood, worked.
Yeah.
Right. And so, yeah, that's where. But it wasn't easy. Like I said, I mean, there are a lot of benefits, but the weather is sucky here.
Yeah. It's probably cold all the time.
It's cold all the time, but more than that, the winters are dark, right? It sunrises at 9:30, and it's like a grayish hue till about 2:30, and then it's dark again. It's very tough on a lot of people, right?
Yeah.
You don't have sunlight for a greater part of the year. Very, very difficult that way. People, I would say, once you know them, they're very, very friendly. But otherwise, social distancing is the norm.
I love that.
The word that is ubiquitous right now, but social distancing is the norm. Right, it was very difficult, and Sumitra and I actually, you know, 6 months into our lives in Sweden, we said, hold on, we need to change, we need to make a lot of new friends, a lot of new local friends, and outside, and we have to make that effort, because it just came naturally for us when we were back home in India. Right. It wasn't anymore, so I had to go out and understand how they sort of mingle with people, what are the places where people actually meet.
Right.
You had to go to these international meetups. You had meetup apps.
Yep.
Yeah.
You had to walk in and you know, which is very strange for me, but we did all that. And then you had to take up activities together, because like I said, it's cold outside. Not many people hang out all the time outside. So you need to find locations where there are activities are ongoing. So like Sumitra, you know, joined salsa classes.
Yeah.
Okay. Nice.
And that's where she met a few friends.
Okay.
And then the network started building.
So right.
We met someone who knew someone who knew someone. Then we met someone who knew on a flight to Barcelona. And then, you know, then that's how the whole group forms.
Basically, you are starting your whole community from scratch. You know, this is you building your own life and your own community now, which is tough as an immigrant when you go into a new country, let alone a country that you don't have anybody, right?
Right. Right. And it's not also like you had the opportunity to kind of like go to college in one place. So like you're forced to meet up with people with like a similar mindset and a similar age group and, you know, a similar point in your lives. You kind of have to do it in the workforce, which, you know, even just moving from Madison, which is a smaller kind of college town, to Chicago, it felt like, okay, now I really have to get out of my kind of comfort zone. And even though I have a few friends from college who are living around here, it's like, okay, I really have to put myself out there and, like, as you said, find these activities where different people are meeting each other and who are, you know, a lot of the millennial workforce is from out of the city.
Right.
You know, they all come into the city to work. So, you know, trying to tap into those networks and like build your own social group through putting in more of an effort than it was in college. So yeah. I can imagine like moving to Sweden, a completely different place culturally, and also at a time when like, you know, you're not in college, you don't have those kind of college networks that you can kind of tap into. Must have been difficult.
Rishikesh, now that you've done your move, you moved from India, now you're in Sweden. Looking back at the journey, do you have any regrets about how it all unfolded?
Not really. I think it has worked very well for me. I always had this ambition of starting something on my own. And that was always there in me from a very young age, right? I'd seen my dad and mother struggle. I wouldn't call it, I mean, struggle in the sense, in a typical Indian way, right? To ensure we got our, you know, a good house to live in, a good education, and so on. They obviously started at the bottom, and they were climbing up the ladder, right? And my dad was also a sales guy in the IT industry. So he was also traveling like crazy. And then he kind of put that little worm in my head that, you know, I should be on my own and do something. I don't have to really, you know, turn to someone for a job or something like that. And that was a big motivator for me. So even after my MBA and so on, I joined startups.
Okay.
Though I had opportunities to work for the large IT firms and so on, I joined startups in the healthcare segment and some engineering segment and so on. But then I moved to a large IT firm again because I had to. I got married, I needed more money and things like that. But then this bug was always there. And I think moving to Sweden, it really gave me an opportunity to do something on my own without having to worry about, like I said, visa issues and so on. And this is a culture that encourages you to do something on your own. Yeah, one thing I do regret is I couldn't spend too much time with my parents, especially my dad. We lost him 3 years back. I would have really loved to spend a lot more time with him. He would have been very happy to see. He knew I had just started my company when he passed away, but he would have been happy to see where I have come so far. So yeah, probably the only regret I have. And of course, being away from my sister and cousins. So there is very little cousin interaction, right? So and I think that's what's going to happen even between my sister's kids and my kids. So I would say family time is something that's something that I regret. But apart from that, I think career-wise and everything else, I think it's been really great.
Okay. Speaking of kids, you have one now and you've got a second one on the way. Congrats on that, by the way. How do you see them fitting into Swedish culture and being, I'm guessing you are planning now that you've got citizenship, you're planning on staying in Sweden indefinitely. You know, so how do you envision your kids' lives being Swedish Indian, and you know, some of the challenges that they might face or some of the things that you can kind of help shed some light on?
They're going to be confused for sure. So maybe you guys can probably share your experiences and tell us how it was for you. Probably my kids would have a similar experience to what you went through.
Right.
But the good part I see is, I mean, my son is a little less than 2.5, but he understands 3 languages or 4 languages.
Oh, wow.
Right? Wow.
Hopefully he starts speaking all the 4 languages. So he understands Swedish, he understands English, Tamil and Malayalam. I speak to him in Tamil, and then my wife speaks to him in Malayalam. School is Swedish, and of course, TV is English. So so he follows everything, and I think that would be a big exposure for him. But it's a very safe place for kids. It's one of the best places in the world for you to bring up a child. In terms of hierarchy, in terms of importance in Swedish society, it would be kids, pets, women, men.
I really like this hierarchy.
We do worry about certain aspects in terms of race and so on. Should we, while the society is great, you cannot completely do away with the fact that he is brown skinned.
Right.
and he will stand out in certain places. The big question that we have is, should we teach him to sort of fight his way through, or should we teach him to sort of be a little more malleable and adjust himself? And that's a big question mark that we have.
Right.
I don't know. If he's getting bullied, should he fight back?
Right.
We don't know. So that's a question mark, but I think we will find an answer when we get there.
Yeah. As it unfolds, you'll be able to navigate through it. Because at the end of the day, you guys are already balancing your identities, right? You're Indian, you're in Sweden, and now more so for Yuven and your future child, it's going to be even more complicated because they have Indian roots, but they're not really going to be 100% Indian. Like, your experiences are not going to be theirs. Just like mine and Bharat's, we grew up in Zambia and we relate to being Zambian more than being Indian. So that'll be a very interesting journey to see how it'll unfold for these future generation of kids that are, you know, you're going to be bringing up. Especially, I think, from where you come, I see it as more from where my parents were. It was a very narrower mindset. But we're hoping as we are older parents now in this generation, maybe we have a different outlook and maybe it's okay to allow our kids to be Swedish or Canadian or American. And
that's tough, right? And that'll kind of also be interesting, you know, because when we speak to our parents and, you know, the way we know our parents, they have a certain, you know, view of the world. And ours is almost constantly at clash with that view of the world. It's definitely tough. I would think it's tougher for them being parents with certain expectations for their kids and watching your kids grow up to be a different version of who they are compared to what you had in your mind. It'll also be interesting to see how, you know, you might have certain challenges that, and we will most likely have certain challenges too, just raising kids in a different time, in a different place than we grew up in, and kind of being okay with them living a different version of their life than what we envisioned. You know, is that something that you've thought about in terms of how you balance that?
Yeah, I mean, I think we still want to, you know, sort of hold on to some of that Indianness. But I think even from our parents' generation to our generation, I think a lot of it has just sort of faded.
Right.
And I think it would fade further, or it would be a new culture that they will, you know, develop, which would be a mix of whatever we give them and also the Swedish system and whatever they learn from their peers and so on, which is fine with us. I mean, we do understand that that's how it's going to be.
Yeah.
And we are okay with that.
Being first, I guess you'd be first generation immigrants since you moved out of India. Have you ever kind of caught yourself feeling this stronger sense of wanting to identify being Indian than you maybe even thought about while you were in India? You know, do you do certain things, or do you catch yourself trying to do certain things or gravitating towards certain things that are more Indian? Because, you know, now that you're outside of India, you kind of have to think about these things a bit more.
Yeah, I mean, so you do generally think about all the, how do you sort of retain the culture? How do you sort of partake in all the festivities and so on, right? There are, of course, Indian groups here that have your typical Diwali celebrations. And even at home, I think, while we are not very religious that way, still, I mean, there is a little element there, you know, that comes in, at least Tata Padam irukkanga. At least he knows that is Tata, right?
So right.
There is a little bit of that. I haven't been very religious my life either. I don't think it's going to be a big thing. Yes, we will partake in all these festivities, but if they don't partake, that is also okay.
This way, I feel like Bharat and Rishikesh can really relate, because I'm a little bit more religious. I hold on to a little cultural aspects of a lot of things.
And I'll tell you why that is, right? So that way, Sumitra is also. And I think somewhere in, I don't know, maybe it's the psyche of how we've been brought up. The woman tends to take on that role of conserving.
Yeah.
I don't know if it is DNA. I don't know if it is how you've been programmed or how you've been trained.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Because Sumitra also celebrates festivals. So she's a Malayali, but she celebrates, you know, Onam and Vishu and whatnot. But she also celebrates Varshaparpu and Deepavali and, you know, Pongal and whatnot.
Right.
So she does all that.
Yeah.
And even if there is something that has to be done, my mom calls Sumitra and says, hey, iniki idu pannanum.
Right.
So it is, I mean, it's all directed at her. And so I'm like, okay, you do the conservation part and I will be the liberal dad. So.
I love that. I can 100% relate. I think it's the same in my household where my husband, Rahul, he's just do whatever makes you happy. And, you know, and I'm the one kind of driving that. So I can relate to Sumitra in this particular respect where we want to conserve our, you know, we don't necessarily need to be religious, but we want to conserve our culture even right. more because we're not in India. Mm. I don't want it to be lost if I do have kids in the future, that to be lost, you know. So it's something I'm very conscious about.
Yeah, sure. I think when I, yeah, the way I think about it is, as long as culture makes sense, like, do it. When it starts to become so ritualistic that you're doing it for the sake of doing it, and there's no other meaning behind it. Because for me, I do certain things that are ritualistic that I don't understand at all. Because the only thing that holds me to it is this kind of nostalgia around it, right? But my kids aren't going to have any nostalgia associated with some of these ritualistic things. Even, you know, as time goes on, I'm starting to lose that nostalgic feeling of doing some of these rituals and ceremonies and all of that. So if I myself am at a point where this doesn't make sense to me, I don't really understand why I'm saying certain things or doing certain things for certain events, it's like, I don't know what value there is in holding on to it if the only value is in repeating it and saying, labeling that as Indian or Tamil or whatever it is. You know, obviously with cultural arts is a different thing. You know, arts is always, it's arts. You know, there's something else that is emotionally connected to it. And so I kind of gravitate more towards Indian cultural arts than I do with some of these like cultural, traditional, religious aspects. But as you said, right? You know, I feel like women in our societies do grow up with this responsibility on their shoulders to carry the whole weight of the family on them when it comes to raising the kids, when it comes to, you know, setting the tone culturally for a family. You know, we always hear, you know, fights in the families where they're just like, oh, look at your kids. Look at what your kids are doing. You know, men telling the women that. It's kind of ingrained in our society that the women take the onus of passing our culture forward and passing these values forward. Right. And the men are just making the paycheck, I guess, and coming home and relaxing. But that's what it
yeah, but yeah, I would say it has changed drastically. I mean, apart from the cultural aspect, I mm-hmm. think Sumitra and I share pretty much everything equally at home. Mm. That's been the big change for me, having moved to Sweden. I used to lend a hand in India. We had someone to come and cook for us. We had someone to come and clean up the house and, right. and whatever. But having moved here, pretty much everything from the baby to the kitchen and so on. So I can do more than survival cooking. So that way it is good. I mean, it's been a huge change.
Yeah.
People, when we went back to India and for Yuan, I was like, you know, just turning him around, changing his diapers, giving him a bath, feeding him, whatever. And there are a couple of people who came and asked me, do you do this on a regular basis? I said, yeah. And they said, oh, that's very strange. We never see anyone do that here. Mm. And that was like, that's when I realized, oh God, this is something that probably I would have continued in the same way had I been in India, right?
Wow. So right.
just the fact that I was here and I had to do it. There was no one else to do it
right
and it just became a natural thing for me to do, and I never thought about it that much,
right?
It's just second nature that I had to, you know, do this for my kid or cook up a meal or whatever.
But
that's when I realized, you know, and Ramya, my sister, and I spoke about it. Damn, my mom used to work. She used to wake up, make, you know, pack lunch for us, make breakfast for us, go to office, come back, and then make dinner. She used to cook 3 meals a day, go to work.
Wow. Yeah.
And drop us off for our tennis classes and walk in between. And I'm like,
yeah.
Whoa.
She did it all.
That must have been something, right? And to do this day in and day out for, you know, what? I was at home till I was 20, 21. And then my sister was there till she was 25.
Yeah.
To do this day in and day out would have been, I mean, killing.
I have one last question for you, Rishikesh. I guess let's just do it. What do you say and what do you think when someone asks you, where are you from?
Interesting. So it depends where I am at that moment, mm-hmm. right? If I'm a tourist in Europe, I would say Sweden.
Okay. Yeah.
Right. If I understand the context a little more, I probably would say India, but it is very subjective. I know I'm kind of caught in between, but it depends. But it's a damn good question, and it gets confusing right now. Also, you know, to say, yeah, but then you sort of, once you get into a conversation, you say, yeah, originally from India, but been living in Sweden for a long time.
When you think about your own identity, though, you know, do you say I'm Indian, or, you know, now that you've, you know, putting legal status aside because you're a Swedish citizen, do you look at yourself and think, oh, I'm Swedish? Or is it kind of that hyphenated identity of, yeah, I'm Swedish Indian, I'm comfortable being in that in-between place?
Yeah, ethos, I mean, yes, I am still Indian that way. But I think I've imbibed a lot of the Swedish culture, how they speak with people, how it's a very consensus-driven society. So people don't sort of, it doesn't matter whether you're a CEO or just an engineer, right? Nobody overrules you just like that, right?
Okay.
I love that.
Interesting.
Right? It's a very different thought process. And for you to understand that, and also even in my today, well, technically I am the boss, but I'm not the boss. I still need to, you know, get the consensus of all other people who work with me, my colleagues. And then, you know, also try and bridge the gap between how the India team works, how the Swedish team works. And I need to bridge that cultural difference, the way people think, the way people communicate, and so on. Because in Sweden, even if it's a junior engineer or whoever would come and tell you, hey, this is not how it should be done, because they're very confident about what they're doing. In India, they wouldn't. They look at the hierarchy.
Right.
They probably wouldn't say it out loud. Right. So there's a lot that I've imbibed. I would say I am not as aggressive as I would have been had I been in an Indian company or an American company.
Yeah.
And I see that in a lot of American companies. I mean, on the border of being very rude, I wouldn't do that now. I used to be very abrasive at one point in time because I had to get the job done.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But right now, I think, I'm trying to build a company that brings the best of both India and Sweden, right? And then try to make it global. And that was also the mindset with which I actually created that company. So yes, I would say I've imbibed a lot of that culture as well.
I really like that. I really like that you said you're trying to bridge two societies, and, you know, from where you come from, right? And you're bringing that together in your company as one union, as you're also going to be doing with your children too.
Right, so, I was thinking about that, yeah.
Yeah, I can really draw the parallels from both, you know, how you're going to be running your company is also values that your son would probably look up to see,
right.
Wow, there is an aspect that comes from India and there's an aspect that comes from Sweden, and here we are.
With that, I don't have any more questions, Raksha.
I don't. Do you have anything to say to us, Rishikesh?
No, I think it's very interesting that you guys have started with this podcast and very aptly called Two Suitcases. I have a rule till I move, you know, with family. Like I said, I'd moved so many cities and I always moved just with two suitcases. Right? And that was a rule I had. I will not carry more than two suitcases, and that would include, you know, everything from my regular clothes, shoes, suits, and whatnot, all within two suitcases, because it made moving very easy. I could actually move overnight to different cities, and I've actually done that. I would just say, anybody wanting to move, just do that. But I would actually say, encourage a lot of people. I also write, now I've started writing quite a bit on LinkedIn and so on, but I would encourage a lot of young professionals to actually travel a lot more. Don't stay in your cocoons. Even if you're in India, travel. You know, India is such a vast, beautiful country. And I have traveled pretty much the length and breadth of the country. I have traveled alone. I've traveled in groups. I've traveled across Europe. I've traveled across the US. Yeah, I would say travel. It opens up your mind to a lot of new possibilities, a lot of new things that you learn. You will have some not so great experiences, but you'll have some amazing experiences as well.
No, that's really good. That's really good advice in general. A lot of us kind of feel like, oh, because I'm an immigrant, I can't really leave the US. But you know, if your paperwork doesn't allow you to leave the US, travel the US, see the diversity that's in the country that you're living in. A lot of us are kind of in that weird place where we don't have the freedom to just up and move and up and go visit the Caribbean or up and visit some other country altogether. Even in the place you are, there's a lot of diversity and a lot of differences in perspectives that you can explore.
Welcome, everybody, to a segment called Shattering Stereotypes. As Indians from Africa, we've been asked some of the craziest questions. Hey, Barth, you're from Africa, but you're not black?
Well, actually, just like not every American is white or every European is white, there are a lot of different diverse groups within Africa. There are a lot of immigrants who end up working there and living there. There are a lot of folks who are from different origins, such as Indians and white folks from Europe, who have lived there for generations. Africa is a diverse place.
Looks like you shattered yet another stereotype.
Woo!
Woo!
Thank you all for tuning in. Hope you were able to take something away from this conversation. Please follow us on our Facebook and Instagram at Two Suitcases Pod. Again, that's at Two Suitcases Pod spelled out. Feel free to leave feedback, ask questions, or even suggest topics for future episodes. Look out for the next episode on Spotify, Apple, and Google Podcasts. Thanks for unpacking with us. See you next time.